How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Tuesday morning, January 12th, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Last night, of course, was the Raw versus Impact Monday Night Wars 2010. And tonight, it was Raw versus UFC, and what a 180. This was a boring evening.
Yeah, I mean, you know what was amazing to me was it just shows, I don't know what it shows exactly about Mike Tyson, but boy did, you know, boy did that thing turn out to be like a complete lemon. I mean, like the script writing of it, they went so overboard. Mike Tyson's going to be, you know, stepping in the ring for the first time, and I don't know, it'll be interesting. I'm very curious if there was any kind of curiosity rating, because boy, in Minneapolis, they did not seem excited one bit over this.
No, they did not care at all.
Yeah. Part of it was, you know, when I think part of it was, you know, it was such a joke because you got Mike Tyson and he wouldn't take his shirt off.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was, you know, I mean, I thought he looked like he was 270, which is down from the 300 pounds, you know, I heard he was before. But still, he did not look like an athlete.
He was not in his prime.
No. And I think that the public fascination with Mike Tyson, you know, I mean, I think that ended many, many years ago. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know, you know, again, maybe they got something out of it, but yeah, I would say so. I thought Raw was kind of a boring show, and UFC didn't, you know, it was all decision night. I thought some of the fights were okay, but it was, you know, it was going in, you know, it was no name value show, and I think that it seemed like they had a pretty hot crowd, but the crowd, you know, kind of got tired of the show, and they certainly didn't like the main event.
No. Let's talk about the UFC show first. We'll open with that, and then we'll talk about the Raw show. Not a whole lot to talk about with UFC. The opener saw Amir Sadola beat Brad Blackburn. It was a three-round fight, went to the judges. They gave it to Amir. A lot of, I mean, this was one of those fights that just watched it and kind of got tired. You know, it's just, this did nothing for me.
You know, I thought Amir did good. Brad Blackburn kind of disappointed me in the sense that, you know, he was lucky to get a decision over Edgar Garcia the last time I saw him, and then he had shoulder surgery, and he said that, like, that repaired his shoulder, and he would be willing to punch, but he wasn't that effective.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I thought Amir won the fight pretty handily, and, you know, it's what it was.
You know, the thing about...
He was... I heard Amir and Chris Lieben were the two most over guys on the show.
Hmm. All I know is that in this fight and in the second fight, which was Tom Lawler and Aaron Simpson, there was a theme that always drives me crazy. And it appeared to drive Joe Rogan crazy as well, in that in the first fight, Amir just rocks him in the first round. And it looks like he's on his way to finishing him. And he takes the man down and the man has time to recover. And then he's fine for the next round. And in the second fight, the same thing with Tom Lawler and Aaron Simpson. Lawler, actually, I think what happened in the second fight is I think Lawler got tired because he was destroying Aaron Simpson.
Lawler was taking him apart in round one,
destroying him. And then, like at the end of that round, though, he was taking him apart standing, and then he just stopped. And for like a full minute, he did not engage at all. I don't know if he blew himself up in the first 4 minutes.
I think it was pretty clear he blew himself up.
Oh my gosh! And Aaron Simpson actually had he made a comeback later in the fight. I actually scored that fight a draw, I believe. And
I had Simpson winning, I think.
Yeah, they gave it to Simpson. It was close. I mean, it was.
I thought it was a really good fight. I thought that was actually pretty exciting, just the way Simpson held on, and you know, it was close to you know, went right down to the wire. And, you know, it's too bad they did not play. They didn't show anyone's ring entrance because all those matches went so long. They were trying to cut time anywhere they could. But Lawler came out to Hogan's music, which is funny because Hogan doesn't even come out to that music anymore.
Another thing I should note about the show here is there was a Randy Couture interview where he was talking about his upcoming fight with Mark Coleman, which, by the way, is taking place, in fact, in 2010. And I just was fascinated because, I mean, we've been talking about this before. What are good matches to put together for money and that sort of thing? But when they announced that the winner of Randy versus Mark Coleman was in line for a 205-pound title shot, I was just like, wow. I mean,
I can't imagine Mark Coleman being in line for one.
Yeah.
Randy, you know, Randy they want because, you know, Randy, you know, you know, Randy's a draw. I'm sure they want him.
Well, he is.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sure they want him to get that. And if you look at that light heavyweight division, I mean, the winner of Evans and Quentin Jackson is probably going to get. Well, I guess it doesn't. I guess the way it all works out, because Machida's not going to be fighting until May, and that's probably going to be Jackson and Evans probably on the same show. So Jackson and Evans' winner will be getting the next shot. So it's not like it's the next shot. You know, it'll be a shot down the line, maybe. You know,
and Randy's got plenty of time to wait.
Well, they both have plenty of time, but I mean, you know, the deal. They're going to have to wait their time. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So I mean, you know, I mean, by the time he would get that shot, he would be 47, and if he were to win, because if Coleman's going to win, he's not getting the shot. I don't see it. But I mean, the point is that. It's not like there's anyone else after the Jackson Evans winner. There's really nobody else in line. I mean, Forrest Griffin. I mean, I guess you could do Randy Couture and Forrest. Well, they won't fight because they're training partners. I'm sure they won't fight. But you would have Forrest Griffin. You can't do Keith Jardine by any means. Thiago Silva just got beat. So, you know, Couture would be like the second guy in line if he were to beat Coleman, which, you know, he certainly would be, you know, one would think that would be the expected outcome. You know, you never know.
And on the subject of title shots, I'm going to skip to the main event here real quick. We'll go back to the Evan Dunham match here in a second, but it was Gray Maynard and Nick Diaz. And of course, last night I was talking about, well, what happens if Nate Diaz blows out Gray Maynard? And anyway,
he didn't.
No, he lost the decision, but I got to say.
I actually had him winning.
Huh?
I had Diaz winning the fight.
Really? Well, he lost the decision. It was a split decision. It was 29-28 Diaz, 30-27 Maynard, 29-28 Maynard. And
I mean, I thought all three rounds were close. So, I mean, no matter what the judges ruled, I thought that was fine. But I thought I actually had Diaz winning the fight.
Well, regardless of who won, all I have to say is that they kept talking about Gray Maynard perhaps getting the next shot at BJ Penn, and when this fight was over, I guess anything can happen in a fight, but there was nothing in this battle that led me to believe that either of these men would have a snowball's chance in hell against BJ Penn.
I don't think there's anyone in that division that's going to have much of a chance against BJ Penn right now, but I will say when the fight was over and... because I mean the deal was if Maynard lost, Edgar was going to get the shot. If Maynard won, then Maynard was going to get the shot since he's got the win over Frankie Edgar. If it was me booking, even though Maynard has the win over Frankie Edgar, I'm giving Frankie Edgar the shot. I guess you could say, well, Maynard is, you know, he's 10-0 and that's a good record in MMA, but I mean, Jesus Christ, he did absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
You know, to earn, you know, to me, you know, I mean, you know, Edgar's looked good in his fights. So to me, I would go with Edgar. I'd go with Edgar ahead of him.
And the only finish on the show was in the Evan Dunham versus Efren Escudero match, which
was a great finish.
Yeah, Efren was actually taking him apart on his feet in the first round, dominated the first round. And then the second round, we had a comeback by Dunham. And then in the third round, we had them ending up on the ground. Evan took him down, got his back, and transitioned to an armbar, which was a tight armbar. And Efren decided he was going to wait a while and see if he could get out, which was a poor, poor idea.
Oh, I think he looks like he got hurt.
Yeah, it appears they got him out of the octagon very quickly. He, of course, submitted. And they got him out of there, and we're talking about how he may have broken his arm or dislocated it. And we don't have an update right now, but I'm sure we will tomorrow. And just tap out, kids, if something like this happens to you.
Oh, boy, yeah. You know, I just loved that finish because it was like he was behind him. He did like a triangle from behind and maneuvered back to the to getting him and had the arm at the same time with the arm bar. That was really one of the best-looking transitions into a finish. You know, I've seen in at least 24 hours.
Yes.
Probably actually longer than that, but there were some cool submissions. I mean, I will say, I wasn't that thrilled with the WEC show, but, you know, definitely better than tonight's show.
Oh, God, after tonight, that show last night looked like show of the year.
Yeah.
Early in the year, of course.
That show had some, that, you know, the show at least had some real excitement with Faber. You know, I mean, this one really, There were a couple of good fights. Overall, it was okay, but it never really had that great level of excitement. And those guys, did you see the interview with those guys plugging that the TV show that debuted right afterwards?
All I know is I was way behind, and as soon as I saw those guys on TV, I immediately fast-forwarded.
Oh, well, you should have seen the interview. It was absolutely fascinating. Because
I just saw Joe Rogan there with a piece of paper reading from it like he had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, it was Blue Mountain State. It's the college college football television show that Spike's been really heavily promoting, which I'm kind of curious. The actual debut is tonight, but they had like a sneak preview debut. All I know is that I didn't turn off. I actually tape recorded that because it was off. I didn't TiVo it. I was TiVoing Raw. But the thing is that so I was tape recording this show, and I forgot to turn off the tape recorder. And I did tape record the next show, and that show was I only like fast forwarded backwards through it, but that show was freaking nasty.
Yeah, and I actually saw a couple of minutes of it because I was wrapping up my report here, and it said it was TVMA for mature audiences only.
But I mean, there was like it's bleeped out, but it's like so much swearing. And I mean, the clip they showed on the UFC show, there was like two or three bleeps, and then the guy who was behind the show, he said that he was like promoting the show, and he goes like, if you don't like fucking and drinking, and he used the word fucking, although it was bleeped. He goes, if you don't like the word fucking, if you don't like fucking and drinking, then you won't like my show. And he goes, these fight fans will love the show. And then Joe Rogan goes, you have just used a word that you are not allowed to use on Spike TV. Just like that. It was like hilarious.
Well, I got it on
actually,
tape.
That was the most entertaining thing almost of the whole night.
I'll have to go back. And no, the most entertaining thing of the entire night was the battle between Nate Diaz and Gray Maynard. Their promos were better than their fight. Where Nate
yeah,
said,
their promos were good.
Good luck trying to choke me out, white belt. That was the line of the night right there.
Yeah.
Oh, Nate Diaz.
Yeah, but Nate Diaz didn't have a good fight at all.
No, he didn't. Well, neither guy did. It was a night of failures on both parts.
Yeah, just and the crowd booed the fight. I didn't think the fight was that bad, but it wasn't. It certainly wasn't good.
No.
The other thing too is that crowd must have just been burned out because I think on the undercard, it's like I'm not sure how many matches there were. Actually, I could check. But it was like all decisions on the undercard as well. I'll go through the results really quick as soon as I find them because I don't have them right in front of me. Just a second here.
It's like that show where Lyoto finally got the knockout and everybody came unglued because there had been a million decisions on the undercard. That May UFC last year?
Yeah. Let's see. UFC Fight Night coverage. We had Nick Catone beat Jesse Forbes with a split decision. So this was like that UFC 94 show.
Yep.
Okay, Gerald Harris finished John Salter with a ground and pound. Rafael Dos Anjos beat Kyle Bradley by decision. Rory McDonald beat Mike Guymon with an arm bar. Oh, Mike Guymon's, I like that guy. Because I traveled to Europe and back in the same plane with him. And anyway, it was his debut, and he lost, so may not be around. Then Thiago Tavares drew with Nick Lentz. They went to the decision.
Wow.
And then Rick Story beat Jesse Lennox by a split decision. And then Chris Leben beat Jay Silva by a decision. So we had one, two, three, seven fights, five decisions in the undercard. And I guess it would mean 11 fights in total, eight of which went the distance. So it was a long night with no intermissions. And that's one of the reasons I heard that the crowd was very tired by the time the main event got to the ring.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, the night before was a bunch of decisions too. I mean, real. You know,
at least they were fun fights.
Everything, but Sacramento was a better, better crowd and better fights.
Raw show. What a follow up to last week this was.
Yeah, what a nothing.
Well, I can't say it was nothing. There were a couple of segments that I was intrigued by, which we'll get to. Open up with Tyson coming out. And he did, in fact, do some things in the ring in front of the crowd live. And they showed some clips from the Tyson-Austin brawl from early 98, which, by the way, I watched on 24/7 a couple of weeks ago, and it's still awesome today.
That was great.
Incredible.
I'm wondering if, Tyson Kidd's going to have to change his name now.
Well, if Tyson's wrestling regularly, it's possible. But So we got a "You Screwed Sean" chant, which was funny. And Tyson ended up looking completely lost, and so they sent out Sheamus and talked about how he was a real champion and the real baddest man on the planet. And they teased having...
Another thing they mentioned, they said that Mike Tyson was the most iconic sports figure of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Which was just so completely ridiculous.
Ludicrous.
Yeah.
I know that.
From that point on, I think that, you know, people were just going like, come on. Because, I mean, the people, I mean, like in Minneapolis, you know, you'd think this big celebrity, I mean, they did not react to him like he was, you know, Bob Barker or anything like that.
No. Thornton came out and said he just wanted the title. He didn't care about doing a Sports Center moment. And said he wanted Sheamus as his opponent at the Rumble. So then Cena came out and he wanted his shot and made a bunch of punch-out jokes, which went over the heads of many of the youngsters in the crowd. And then finally, Kofi Kingston came out, everyone.
Oh, and somebody's got to do the job.
Orton said, why in the hell are you even out here? And Kofi's argument, everyone, was that...
Yes, I lost last week, clean in the middle, but...
I've never got a shot before.
And these guys have gotten many shots.
Compelling, compelling argument here, Kofi.
Yeah, did you hear Lawler go, neither have I.
He's
right.
The
funny thing with Lawler is Lawler's been around forever.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing that Lawler's never gotten a shot,
yeah.
If that's true.
Yeah. So, it ended up with Tyson... haphazardly is the best word I can use, signing them to a three-way with the winner getting Sheamus at the Rumble. And a long segment, a weird segment. It really was not all that great.
It wasn't bad, though. I thought Cena was pretty entertaining, and Orton, you know, Orton's good.
It was funny.
Kofi, you know, was there.
Kofi had a bad night.
Well, he was going to have a bad night.
We had the fun fact, which was that last Monday, Raw was once again the number one show on cable, so they buried TNA without mentioning TNA.
I knew they weren't coming to TNA. I'm really interested, you know, since as is UFC,
yeah,
how they handled it. If next week they bring up the UFC rating, because, you know, they're going to kill UFC in the ratings. I do think the rating for this show should be up because there's no football, and so it's, you know, no real big sports competition, so, you know, this is a bounce back week, so they should be at a 3.9 or better. I don't know that they will be, but they should be.
You know, aside from bringing in Tyson, I mean, these people clearly did not give a shit about UFC running head to head.
No, because they didn't promote much of anything. But you know, they thought Tyson was all they needed, because Tyson would get. I mean, Tyson was the guy who would be the most over guy in theory for the UFC audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what else are you going to do? You know, load it up with main events? I mean, they didn't, you know, I mean, they had freaking Jericho back in the main event again.
We'll talk about that. We had the Kelly-Alicia Fox match, which was for a tournament match, and complete amateur hour. Kelly tried a Hurricane Run and got power bombed and nearly killed and scared the hell out of me. It was short and not very good.
Did you know Kelly lost her luggage?
That's right.
She had to wear somebody else's clothes. And she had to wear tennis shoes.
Nice stuff. What does she normally wear?
There were some botch spots, except for that twirling dealy that Kelly does that's always good. There was nothing good in that match.
No. We had clips of Cena at the Fiesta Bowl last week. And we had Legacy coming out.
They made him look like a big-time star. That was good.
Yeah.
I like that. That was, that, you know, he handled himself well in the real world, which is, you know, sometimes a challenge for people in wrestling. He was good. You know, in every scene, he just looked like he was a star. The people reacted to him like he was a star. And then in Minneapolis, they booed the hell out of him every time he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, I did love, did you notice something in the, when they were chanting, was it like, what was the thing they were chanting? Was it like, Cena sucks?
In the
opening segment, yeah. And he just goes up to Kofi and just goes, I pay no attention to these people, which I thought was going to get them to really turn on him, and they didn't, which confused me even more.
Well, maybe they didn't hear it. Apparently, the last week, we got a report from a guy that was in, like, the first couple rows and just talking about how he couldn't hear a goddamn word that anyone said all night because the sound system was poor. So, anyway, we had the Legacy come out and talked about how last year, all three of them were in the final four of the Rumble. And last year it was Randy's turn to win, but this year it would be different. And they got into an argument about who was going to win, and Ted plugged his movie and said it was better than the original Marine, And Cody made a joke about how he'd made videos in the fifth grade that were better than the original Marine.
I like that one. That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. When they're burying their own films, that's something else there.
Yeah.
So, Mark Henry.
That's right at the TNA.
It was, really. Mark Henry and Evan Bourne came out, and they're a new tag team, as I guess they've broken up Henry and MVP. They're going their own separate ways, and they faced Legacy. And broke down into a four-way. Cody killed Evan with a roll of the dice. Good finish, fun finish, but match really was not much.
It was short.
It was short, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, Mark Henry was in a lot. Seemed like a lot.
Yeah. Hunter and Sean back.
That one spot where he kind of was supposed to miss a tackle and go over the top ropes in really slow motion.
Oh, yeah. Hunter and Sean backstage, and Hunter basically told him that the Bret Hart deal last week was one thing, but confronting Tyson was completely different, because, of course, Tyson's a threat, you see. Said Tyson's a madman. He was the guy that put Sean out of action for 4 years, which was some fun revisionist history. And Sean said,
well, that was his last spot.
It was in
4 years.
It was his last bump until his big return. Well, I guess he had a couple of those matches for the TWA or whatever he called it.
Yeah, but they're supposed to have never happened.
That's right, yeah. So Sean says, well, you know, I've seen his documentary, and I think he's a changed man. So they met up backstage, and he told Tyson that last week he'd gotten some closure after many years for Montreal and Brett, and tonight he wanted to bury the hatchet with him. And Tyson said, well, listen, I don't want to bury the hatchet with you. And in fact, I'd like to knock you out again right now. And Jericho walked in cackling, and Sean's like, haven't you been kicked off Raw twice? And Jericho explained that he made a deal with the GM, Tyson, and tonight they were going to have a match, and if Jericho won, he would have the opportunity, I guess, to come back to Raw whenever he wanted, which I thought he already had. But the announced match was DX against Jericho and Tyson, and then the supposed heels cackled and walked off, and I just... And especially when they actually put the match in the ring, it's just one of those things where, like, Tyson agreed to do this and you didn't even pump it up for 1 week or anything. I can't even say you didn't even put it on pay-per-view because I don't know if it would even mean anything. But
it wouldn't be that
a week.
Big on pay-per-view. But it would be something because got to remember here, you know, when Tyson was doing the thing 10 years ago,
people thought it'd be
match.
Tyson
he
Austin.
Only refereed, so this would be his first time actually doing the match.
Yeah.
But Tyson's, you know, Tyson doesn't really mean a lot, but yeah, so I wouldn't say like pay-per-view, but it is amazing. If he was going to actually wrestle, they probably should have advertised it all week long as opposed to just having him as GM.
Yeah.
It would have increased the ratings probably significantly, actually.
Yeah.
But what can I say?
Swagger in the ring, ranting and raving about how he was going to win the Rumble and go on to win WrestleMania, and he issued an open challenge to anybody backstage to come out and try and knock him over the top rope, and I thought for sure it was going to be Hornswoggle, but ended up being...
I thought it was going to be the Great Khali.
Well, it could have been him, too. It was Santino, however, and he eliminated him quickly, and Swagger was mad.
Santino won.
Yeah.
Because Swagger threw him out, and then Santino reversed it in midair, and Swagger ended up on the floor.
Sucks to be Jack Swagger.
Wow, it sure did tonight.
Yeah, it did.
But he did a good promo, though.
Didn't suck as much as it did to be Kofi Kingston in this next match here. It was Orton, Kofi, and Cena for the title. And I should note that Michael Cole actually said that Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston was the feud of the year for 2009. An amazing whopper right there.
He said that about Cena and Orton.
Was it Cena and Orton?
It was Cena and Orton.
Could have sworn he said it was Kofi and Orton.
No, Cena and Orton.
That also, a tremendous whopper.
Okay, but it was Cena and Orton.
Either way, sick of both of those battles. So anyway, they had a match here, and Sheamus came out and was watching from the ramp, and so it was time for the finish, and Kofi runs up and does his split-legged leap into the corner, and he starts punching Orton a couple times, and I have no idea what happened. I have no idea how he screwed it up. I have no idea what went wrong. All I know is that Legacy eventually hit the ring, and DiBiase like slides into the ring and he kind of whacks Orton on the belly as Kofi is standing there on the middle rope.
No, he took out Kofi's leg.
I guess that's what it was supposed to happen, but
it looked like he hit him in the belly live, but when they showed the replay, he hit Kofi's leg.
I see. So anyway, Orton shoves him off and he throws a temper tantrum. He hits an RKO. He begins repeatedly yelling at Kofi, calling him stupid.
He did.
Yes, he did. He RKO'd him and pinned him and then stood up and called him stupid again. And then he turned to the camera and lipped the words, "He fucked it up." And
so what did he do that was so, I couldn't really tell. The whole thing just looked like a mess.
All I can think is that, like, Kofi did this split leg into the corner and then did some punches and then kind of did a backward roll off, and then he hit Orton some more and then climbed back up into the same position. So all I can figure is maybe he went for it way too early, and so Legacy ended up being really, really late to run out there, and I think it was just...
But Orton was in position for him to run up and do that.
Well, yeah, but I don't know.
Obviously it was a mess.
Yes.
I mean, that was clear by... But, you know, but you'd have never known if Orton hadn't blown his cool.
And he blew his cool.
I mean, to me, Kofi may have made a mistake, you know. I'm sure Orton thinks that, but Orton, to me, was the one who was unprofessional.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't so glaring. If he didn't do that, you know, nobody would have known any better. And to me, that's the job of professionals when somebody screws up, you know. I mean, that's what I always thought Rey Mysterio was so great at, is that, you know, whenever there's a screw-up in a Rey Mysterio match, it's like, you know, they ad-lib so quick that you just think that it was actually something that was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to somebody throwing a fit where there's no doubt.
So one thing when, like, in the example of Kennedy, because that's the last time Orton threw a fit like this on TV.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I hope that's... Well...
It's one thing when you lift a dude up and you drop him right on his neck and shoulder and he's got a bad collarbone. I mean, that's one thing. I can understand getting really upset about that. But a guy screwed up the timing of your match, is it really that big a deal?
I wasn't enamored with Orton on this one.
No.
I thought, you know... Watching it, that it was, he was the one who called attention to it, you know, as opposed to, you know, part of being a worker in doing a realistic match is when things don't go right, you realistically adjust like it's real, as opposed to throwing a fit because your performance, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that they try to drive in these people's heads, you know, like when, you know, you work like it's a shoot, which is, you know, in the sense that, you know...
Well, kind of,
you know,
got that.
What?
Kind of got that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they've been trying to drive in the wrestlers' heads for the last couple of years. And then the big complaint is, you know, that under fire, you know, the instinct isn't there. And then your top guy, you know, or one of your top guys goes in there and just completely acts like, you know...
Not to mention, if you're the veteran in there and there's a young guy in there with a lot less experience and he gets confused or his timing is wrong. I mean, it's kind of your job to try to carry him and try to solve this problem as opposed to just freaking out about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not a good night for poor Kofi. And
I hope he's not future endeavored over that. I doubt he will be.
But. Yeah, doubtful. I mean, it's screwing up timing is one thing. Almost hurting a main eventer is something totally different. Plus there were...
Plus nobody hates Kofi, and there were a lot of people who... There were, you know... I mean,
Kennedy had made one idiotic move after another.
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy, yeah, people were sick of him. And also, Vince was out of his mind that week, and this week, I don't think Vince has, you know, got any reason to be out of his mind.
No. So Josh was trying to interview Tyson, and walks...
So anyway, Orton's wrestling Sheamus instead of Cena.
Well, that's right, yeah.
So they switched the match.
Yeah, I guess they want Cena in the Rumble, which I guess would make him a favorite, or...
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting little twist there from what we'd expected.
Yeah, but that means... that the Rumble spot where DiBiase throws out Orton is also no longer there.
So I guess he's throwing out Kofi. Or, I'm sorry,
DiBiase and Rhodes are in the Rumble without Orton.
Yeah, so I guess he'll throw out Rhodes.
Yeah, he could do that.
Yeah, or vice versa. We had Tyson doing an interview, and Hornswoggle walked up, and he walks up, and Tyson's first words are, "Fascinating." So he got down on his knees, and he... basically told Hornswoggle that if he tried anything tonight, he would rip out his intestines and jump rope with them, which was...
I like that line.
It was a hell of a threat, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they scripted, you know, because obviously that was a line scripted. They should script their own guys with lines that good.
We had Miz coming out.
He was
going
to rip the nose off his face and, like, eat his brains or something?
He was going to... I think he said he'd rip his nose off his face, put it in newspaper, and smash it against a window like Silly Putty or something rather creative. So,
yeah, well, they should be scripting their own guys with that kind of menacing stuff.
Didn't threaten to bite his ear off. I thought that would be an obvious one.
Yeah, maybe Tyson wouldn't have gone for that.
Yeah.
That's too close to, you know.
Sure. Miz did a promo, actually a hell of a promo.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, talked about how there was a period where, perhaps this is an inside story I'm unaware of, but he talked about how he'd been banished from the locker room for 6 months because he ate some chicken over a referee's bag and spilled some of the chicken in there. Huh.
I never heard that story, and it doesn't sound right, because I think that if he was not allowed in the dressing room for 6 months, we you know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd think.
However, I will say that when he talked about, you know, JBL, you know, like, you know, mocking him, I know that was real, because I remember always hearing about how JBL would just give that poor man, you know, hell when he first broke in.
Yeah.
I never heard that people were trying to get him to quit, though, which he claimed. He claimed the first 6 months he was there, people were trying to get him to quit, and he wouldn't quit. I never heard that people were doing that. But I did know, you know, some people found him annoying. And, I mean, you know, you got to remember, he started as babyface, and he was one of the most completely annoying babyfaces they ever had.
Yeah. So he talked about how he channeled all that aggression into becoming a star. Now he had his own locker room, and there was a separate geek locker room for guys like Evan Bourne and MVP. And eventually MVP came out, and they bantered back and forth. And MVP wasn't on his game for a while until he started talking about how he had actually been in the Florida State prison system for 9 years and had lived a life that Miz had only seen on TV, and dared him to open up the cage and let him out, and they ended up getting into a huge brawl. And MVP was doing running leapfrogs in his dress clothes, which
the shoes and the suit pants.
That was something to see. So
I like that segment, though. I thought they both came off good, and I thought it was probably the best thing on the show.
Yeah, there's some good stuff right there. Very good stuff. So I presume they're battling for the Intercontinental title at the Rumble.
U.S. title.
U.S. title, I'm sorry. At the Rumble.
They never actually said that, but you would think that, and you would think that they should have said it if that was the case, right?
Well, there's 3 weeks left, right?
So they could do it on TV. Yeah, but, you know, to me, it's never too early to announce matches.
That's true, yeah.
You know, I mean, when they're done. But they gave the impression, but they never said when. I mean, and if it's on TV, that was too good of a segment for a TV match, to build up a TV match. So I would hope it's at the Rumble.
We had Eve and Katie Lee in another tournament match, and a lot of people have been saying, God, why isn't Katie Lee wrestling? Why isn't Katie Lee wrestling? And she had a real good backbreaker in this match, but other than that, I don't know if I can call this match dreadful, but it really was not very good. And
Eve didn't look good, though.
No, neither of them looked good.
She just... Yeah, neither of them did. That's true.
So
it was short.
Eve rolled her up, and that leads to... This is the semifinals of this tournament, everyone. Maryse versus Eve, and Gail versus Alicia. So...
So we're probably going Maryse and Gail Kim, with Maryse going over.
At least we'll have a... At least... That has the potential to be a decent match with Gail in there.
No guarantees.
Well, no, because you've got Maryse in there.
Yeah.
We had Vince coming out to cut his big promo, and what a letdown this was. Came out, and crowd initially started chanting, "We want Brett." And Vince said he wanted to quell rumors that he'd hired extra security to keep Brett out of the building, and said Brett was not there because he was intimidated. And he said that 12 years ago, Brett spat on him, sucker punched him, and walked out on the company and screwed himself, basically.
If you tell a guy, when he confronts you and he's in the shower, right, and he says, "When I get my clothes on, if you're still here, I'm going to punch you," and then he gets his clothes on and you're still there and he punches you, is that a sucker punch? I mean, it may be. I don't know. I just
well, it depends if he hit him from behind, for example.
You didn't hit him from behind.
Well, then it wasn't a sucker punch, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if you remember in Wrestling with Shadows when they showed Brett, he got scratched. I mean, they were like, it was like a lock up, and you know, it wasn't like a sucker punch. It was like they were in a freaking...
They had a tussle.
They were in a clinch, and somebody got the first punch in, and that was the last punch also.
Yeah.
So I don't know that sucker punch is quite the term, but I mean it's fiction. So
well, Brett also did not screw himself.
Well. There's different ways of interpreting that. I mean, I would agree completely. You know, obviously, I will completely, you know, I mean, when you really examine the situation, and you know, but the thing is that from Vince's standpoint, I think Vince does believe that.
Yeah.
Even after all these years.
So he said, last week I screwed Brett, and he said he didn't play nice, he didn't forgive, he didn't forget, and at this point a bunch of people, not like a large portion of the building or anything, but some very loud men began to chant boring, and it appeared to throw Vince off of his game. And he ended up kind of regaining his composure, and he said his own closure was leaving Brett Lang last week, and he was officially and forever banning Brett. Brett would never be seen in WWE again, and right. That was the end.
Forever is 7 days.
Forever is 6 days now, actually. Okay. So, yeah, it was...
I mean, it's the same forever as Jericho last week.
True. Maybe Brett can show up with Jericho, since Jericho can find his way on every show. Tyson was shadowboxing backstage, and dude hits hard. I guess that's obvious. We had Shawn doing a promo before the main event, saying that next week he wanted the answer from Undertaker about whether or not he was going to face him again at WrestleMania. So I guess that's Undertaker's return to Raw next week to make that announcement.
We need something, because that Don Johnson isn't exactly going to pull in ratings.
No. Don Johnson and Napoleon Dynamite. What a duo next week.
Yeah. So they did announce Austin for March 15th in San Diego, though.
That's right. He's going to be the guest host March 15th.
So that means that Rock would probably... Let's see. Well, there's a lot of dates in March left, so...
Yeah. So they had the match. It was DX and Jericho and Tyson. And I have to say, I was impressed with Mike Tyson's lockup.
Yeah, they were just fine.
I was really impressed, actually, because I go to a lot of indie events, and he locks up better than a lot of the indie guys that you'll see out there. And a lockup is not an easy thing to do. And he locked up with Shawn.
He was locking up with Shawn Michaels.
I guess he locked up with Hunter, too. Yes, that's true.
You notice Hunter didn't really work with him at all.
No.
You know, I mean, Shawn did everything and sold for him like he was, you know, doing World's Strongest Man spots.
Yep, Shawn took two bumps for a shove and then took a shoulder tackle. And Hunter tagged in and bulled him into the corner. Or they did two shoving spots first, and then he bulled him into the corner, and Jericho got a tag. And did some spots. Jericho hit Shawn with an enziguri and told Tyson to knock him out. And Tyson tagged in. Hornswoggle's music hit. He came out in the DX boxing gear. And both teams had a stare down. And Tyson ended up taking off his shirt to reveal a DX shirt. Another flashback to 97, 98. And Jericho slowly turned around. And Tyson gave him the knockout punch. And Shawn covered Jericho, who I should note was the illegal man, for the pin. So I guess maybe that can be Jericho's out next week, that he was the illegal man when he was pinned in this match, and so therefore he's coming back to try it again. Anyway, Jericho's gone forever again, and Tyson's kid got in the ring, and they celebrated, called it a family affair, and the show went off the air, and there you go. What a strange Raw. Just, I don't know, just a poor follow-up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they came out of last week's show with a lot of momentum, and... Well, now they don't have any.
Let's do a couple of news notes before we wrap it up today. We're running long. We have the SmackDown main event for tomorrow. It's Rey Mysterio and Batista cage match with the winner facing Undertaker at the Royal Rumble. So I guess they decided, or maybe they decided against a three-way. We'll find out tomorrow.
Because I can't see. I watched, you know, the SmackDown where, by the way, I thought that finish on SmackDown was terrible.
It was very bad.
Yeah, but I can't see them doing it. Two shows in a row, so someone's probably going to have to win, which would probably be Batista.
Or they do the tie. One guy goes out the door, the other guy hits the ground
at
the same
time. Yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
And then just give it up and go for the three-way. Because, I mean, to me, I almost think they should, because all they've done is build the three-way for weeks, and then just go to a singles match. It's almost like, why'd you build the three-way for so long?
Yeah.
Then again, why'd you build Cena and Sheamus for so long, too?
Change their mind again.
Yeah.
At least some of the stuff they've got down for WrestleMania. And then, of course, we've got
They're going to not change? Well, I think Brett and Vince, they probably can't change.
Well, you'd think.
And I think they're locked into Michaels and Undertaker.
Yeah.
So those two are, you know, the rest of it, you know, who knows?
Although, who knows? Undertaker could show up next week and just say no.
Yeah, but that'll mean he's going to do it.
That's also true. God, it's like we're arguing with Jerry McDivitt here. Got a new owner of the UFC. 10% of the company's stock has been sold to Flash Entertainment, a United Arab Emirates-based company.
I don't know what that means.
It means they've got a new guy that put a hell of a lot of money into it.
Yeah, like $100 million probably or more.
Yeah.
I know that they turned down $1.2 billion for the company just in the last year. So, in theory, 10% would be $120 million.
I would suspect this company has money.
The United Arab Emirates company?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I'm just surprised that they sold, you know, because they were just so unwilling to do anything with Shane. Of course, Shane wasn't going to put up $120 million, so.
Maybe this company has got so much money that they figure if this company has a part ownership, then if dire straits occur, there will always be a, I hate to use the word parent company when the company only owns 10%, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, that would be my guess, but.
Yeah, in case the pirating of internet just.
That's true.
Ruins their entire company.
That's true.
They are certainly concerned about.
In case the battle for those pirates ends up sinking their company faster than the pirates do.
Yeah.
Dana White's sitting here talking about how it's going to cost us more money to stop these pirates than the money that they're costing us, which is a kind of a scary statement, but what can you do?
Well, I mean, they're trying to end the piracy, but. Good luck to them.
It is funny that
I completely sympathize with them. I mean, to me, when I read people, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable because it's, you know, probably 85%, you know, are negative on Dana's thing. When I read people try to justify that the piracy is okay because the cards aren't very good, I just get lost there.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one yet.
Yeah, the cards aren't good, so we shouldn't have to pay for them.
Wow. How about that?
You don't have to watch.
I just think it's kind of amazing that, you know, usually moves like this are done by people who are in fear because their business is starting to collapse and they're looking for a scapegoat. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, we've got UFC having their biggest pay-per-view year of all time.
Yeah,
in a year.
I think that there's the fear that, you know, okay, it's really big now, but if it becomes, I mean, I just remember it was when we were in Dallas, Texas. For the it was the night of the Mayweather-Marquez fight, and the Mayweather-Marquez fight was over, or the UFC was over, and the Mayweather-Marquez fight was in the, you know, I don't know, about ninth round, and we watched the last three rounds on a computer screen, and I was with some UFC people, and they were going like, you realize that if we're doing this now, then people are doing this with our show, and this is not good. And it's like, no, this is not good. I think that they, you know, it's a preemptive thing, you know, it's like,
well, yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it's like okay. So they had their biggest pay-per-view year ever, despite the fact that piracy also should be bigger than ever this year. Is piracy really? Are there really less pirates now than there were in 2006? Of course not. It's probably bigger now.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd that you know, shouldn't pay-per-view business be going the opposite direction? Not to mention
nobody's is, other than WWE's is getting killed though.
Well,
I don't think that the piracy has much of anything to do with it.
I would say nothing.
Yeah, TNA's pay-per-view business was horrible this year.
And it's not pirates.
No.
They've had poor pay-per-view business for a long time, and it's very clear the pirate is writing. I think it's the problem. If you ask me.
Do you read some of that the Russo stuff?
Oh yeah, let me just say one thing about the Russo stuff. We talked about this, I think, on the show where. He went on this big deal about. Let me say this. I'll say this about Russo first. I will never say that the guy is not a hard worker or that he's not a creative guy. I have no problem saying that because I firmly believe both things.
Oh yeah, no, I think he's creative, and I will always say, I like the work he does a lot of the time when it comes to scripting of interviews. I don't like his you know, building of matches. I think usually sucks.
No, the problem is he explained everything that's wrong with his writing when he was explaining how he'd put 3 full months, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or whatever it was that he claimed into putting one show together.
That's bullshit. He didn't do that. Because, seriously, that show that they did, you could have come up with that show in easily one day.
But
easily. I've done, you know, written wrestling television shows with people. You know, I mean,
you could do it in an hour max,
and done 2-hour shows in an hour that were, I mean, they were not as detailed as this because I don't believe in doing that. But the point is, I would say like you could do a 2-hour show in an hour. But I mean, even as detailed as he did, you easily easily I could do it on the phone with one other person in a day.
But the point is, I firmly believe that he really, maybe not 3 months or anything like that, but I believe that he put way, way too much time into putting that show together. And that's the problem.
That is a problem.
All of these shows are overwritten. And the other thing he said was, everyone in this company will tell you that I try to give every single person a storyline and I try to get every single person over.
And then, but that's also not true. But even if it was true, that's also a mistake.
It is a mistake. I don't know. I could talk about issues with TNA forever, but those two right there that he explained are like, you know, that right there explains what the problems with the company are. He feels that these two things, trying to get everybody over and spending all of this time.
You can't get everybody over.
What was that?
You can't get everybody
over.
That's
the point.
It's absolutely impossible.
But that's his goal.
Because the point is that to get somebody over in a meaningful way, somebody has to go under.
Yes.
And when you're trying to get everybody over and nobody under, then no one's getting over.
Yeah.
Generally. I mean, there's going to be guys who can flourish just because they're so freaking talented that they can get over anyway. But as a general rule, most people that get over, 80% of the guys that get over, need help. And the help is that somebody else sacrifices themselves. And when you do a match where I beat you, and then after I beat you, you come back and do your finisher on me, neither of us actually get over. We're just running in place.
No, and it's funny when you listen to interviews from people in TNA and people that have worked there for a long time. I mean, they'll all talk about what a nice environment it is and how it's so different from WWE where there's politics and this and that. And obviously
it's
there's
just politics everywhere.
Well, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
I remember guys who would go to me, oh, you know, like, I love to work in Japan because there's no politics. It's like, yeah, there's politics everywhere.
Well, there's politics everywhere, but I think that one of the problems that TNA has is they are oftentimes afraid to want to try to keep too many people happy. And
I remember Bobby Lashley. When Bobby Lashley first came in, okay? When he first came in, I mean, this is, you know, and the big thing was is we are going to build to Bobby Lashley and Kurt Angle. I wonder if they're ever going to actually get there.
No.
That was going to be the big thing. We're going to build Bobby Lashley and Kurt Angle as this big pay-per-view main event, right? And then Bobby Lashley goes in there in that feud with Rhino where he sell, look, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, we don't want to make Rhino look bad. And it's like,
that's...
you're trying to build a pay-per-view main event and you're worried about frickin' Rhino?
Yep. You've got to have a pecking order. And everybody that is, I mean, the lower you go in the pecking order, the more unhappy you are with where you work. But the reality is you have to have that pecking order or nobody gets over.
Yeah.
We're going to be back on Wednesday, everybody. We're going to take your phone calls. We're going to go over some emails. Of course, you can send your emails to mailbag@wrestlingobserver.com, and we'll put the information up about how to call in on the front page in probably later in the evening on Wednesday would be my guess, but I'll try and put something, or have Dave put something in the daily update when we're going to do calls. So you'll be able to do both of those. We'll talk about all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as well. Make sure you check out the front page. Have a new issue of Figure 4 out tonight, new issue of The Observer out tomorrow, and got a back issue.
Maybe a day later.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna
make it by tomorrow. There's too many stories.
Yep.
Tony Halmy, and I really want to do the Steve Williams story, and I got a Bret Hart story that'll be really good, and you know, plus got the all these cards.
That's right.
There's just like a lot of stuff this week.
So it looks like it'll be a day late this week, but we'll still get that up there so you can check that out, and lots of other stuff going up. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.